This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, we'll hear about the country's original opiate crisis. But first, Northern Kentucky University will hold the first ever conference of the Ohio River Valley Addiction Research Consortium this Friday. The idea for the consortium came from a column written by Sam Quinones, author of Dreamland. He suggested colleges and universities in the Ohio River Valley find ways to work together on research to address the heroin epidemic. Joining us to discuss the Ohio River Valley Addiction Research Consortium are NKU Provost and Executive Vice President for Academic Affairs, Sue Ott-Rollins, neonatologist Dr. Kathy Wettig, Director of Cincinnati Children's Neonatal Follow-Up at TriHealth, and the co-founder of the Neonatal Abstinence Clinic at Cincinnati Children's, Margot Spence, who's president and CEO of First Step Home, and author and journalist Sam Quinones. And you can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Sam, Kathy, Margot, and Sue, thank you all for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you for having us here.
A pleasure.
Sue and Sam, you can kind of chime in here along the way. I'm interested in the origins of the consortium. How did the idea for this first come about? And Sue, why don't you go ahead and start us on that story?
Well, this was an outgrowth of Sam's visit to NKU in the spring of 2016 and an op-ed he wrote following that, where he called upon universities to come together as research units and address this opioid crisis that we were in. And Sam, I'll let you take it from there. This was your idea.
Well, it had been, Sue, how you doing, by the way?
Good.
Good to hear from you.
Yeah.
It occurred to me that the whole region bisected by the Ohio River had a really great opportunity, that this disaster catastrophe was presenting the region with a wonderful opportunity as well at renewal, and what it really required was coming together as a community across three state lines, lobbying for increased grant funding for grants to study addiction, the effects on the brain, cures, that kind of thing, and that leaders in that might well be the numerous universities. The universities, of course, with medical centers and maybe research institutes like Ohio State or West Virginia University, what have you, Louisville perhaps, Lexington, University of Kentucky, but also other mid-sized universities that didn't have that but had a lot of kids going back to school, recovering addicts going back to school to study social work, to study addiction counseling, that kind of thing. And it just seemed to me a real important idea that people had maybe not considered, that the economic opportunities involved, the potential of all this were vast, and also might turn a disaster into, again, renewal, something very, very, very positive, because enough grant funding could bring together to bring lots of money, but also PhDs, and frankly, this is what really got me thinking about it, spending a lot of time around recovering addicts and seeing how little opportunity they had to for work and that kind of thing, that this momentum or a lobbying effort in this regard might also provide work for those folks who are going back to school to study addiction counseling or social work, that there might be work for them as well, and it would kind of channel that new energy, that new dynamism that recovering addicts bring to life, that was being wasted because there wasn't this opportunity for them.
Right, and so about 6 months after Sam provided us with that challenge, we called together, I believe the invitation went out to 32 universities in what could be called the Ohio River Valley geographical area. And we had a great response, a planning session, planning group ensued. And this Friday, we have our inaugural conference focused on neonatal abstinence syndrome. So thank you, Sam.
Sam,
my pleasure. Thank you, Sue.
Why do you see regional cooperation as being a key to fighting the heroin crisis?
I would say that this story, as I wrote a book about it and as I gone around the country speaking about it, very quickly distills into isolation versus community. These are drugs that thrive on isolation, that create more isolation, and that really, therefore, the best way, it's my hunch, that the best way to combat them is through community, through leveraging all the different talents and energies and people and expertise and budgets that are in, say, a specific county or a specific region. It's a community response is the only way to really attack this. And it seemed to me that a regional response in this way just was among universities, but also state legislators and congressional representatives and senators and governors was also part of that. Coming together, leveraging all those different talents, all that different energy, and working to provide a regional response seemed to me just natural as a way of fighting a drug scourge that thrives on isolation and that creates more of it. The challenge, of course, is that we have so much in our nation right now that pushes up to isolation, to being alone or to be working in silos. And, of course, the big challenge in creating this is to breach that, to break over through that and to work and to leave behind petty turf battles and that kind of thing and begin to cooperate and collaborate across county, across school lines, across state lines. It's a difficult thing to do, but I think it's actually very, very important if we're to address this drug scourge that's all across the country.
Right, and I would just add that Northern Kentucky University, as a regional comprehensive university dedicated to the population health and well-being of our region, really felt compelled to take a leading role in facilitating this conversation. So it's part of our mandate and part of our mission, and we feel like we're in a position to do that.
Sam, are there different strategies that work in different regions of the country? What works for Ohio might not work for, say, California or another state in the country?
I suppose there must be. I'm not up on every place in the country and what they're doing, but I do believe that overall, I do believe that there is kind of a commonality in the way this is being addressed, and that is to bring together groups and people and organizations and nonprofits and churches that had maybe never been working together before. I've traveled around a fair amount across the country, and I do see that kind of being the best approach. And why is it the best approach? Because I think people understand that it's only through leveraging all those talents and all that energy that we're going to find an approach. And also, it doesn't make any sense for, say, the public health department and the police department to not know what each other is doing and not go out for a beer and get to know one another and see what each other is doing, see what the constraints are of each job, understand in a deeper way. Because clearly, this is a problem that affects both law enforcement and public health. But I think also people are coming to realize that, gee, the churches have a huge role to play in all this. You know what? Athletic trainers and coaches and Little League, therefore, also have a big... And so very early on, I think, as people begin to approach this, they begin to realize that the only way to do it is to break down a lot of those silos, bring different groups in, bring the Kiwanis and the Chamber of Commerce and the churches and the synagogues in to working on this, bring nonprofits and public health department and that kind of thing and the jailer and the court and all of that working together and comparing notes and meeting and getting to know one another in ways that maybe they haven't up to now. It just seems like a no-brainer for a lot of people after they get into this. The problem is, of course, up to now, that's not been done. People have been working in isolation, and it just doesn't seem to me to be very productive to work that way.
Kathy and Margo, I want to bring you into the conversation by asking you, what does the heroin epidemic look like from the perspective of healthcare and treatment institutions? And Kathy, why don't you start for us?
Well, in relationship to children, probably in around 2007, 2008, we started to see babies with neonatal abstinence syndrome more and more in our NICUs. And so over the 10-year period of time, we have found that it's not just something that happens. The babies go home from the NICU and then move on and do well. But many of the children who have been exposed, even without developing a need for drug treatment in the newborn period, are having medical issues, behavioral issues that are affecting their daily lives, even as they are 3, 4, 5, or into school.
What is neonatal abstinence syndrome? Describe that to us.
Neonatal abstinence syndrome is a group of symptoms we see in babies who have been exposed in utero to opioids, as we're talking about it right now. And these babies will have increased irritability. They will have diarrhea. They won't be able to eat well. They'll be sweaty. They'll have increased temperatures. They'll just be in the throes of withdrawal, as their mother may have experienced when she was withdrawing from her opioids. And some of these babies actually need to be treated with methadone or buprenorphine or morphine in order to take the edge off of these symptoms, so that they can even eat appropriately to regain their birth weight and to be able to safely be discharged home from the hospital.
Are you seeing more cases of neonatal abstinence syndrome?
We are. You can either define neonatal abstinence syndrome as those babies who need the drug therapy or babies who are showing the symptoms but do not get symptoms severe enough to need drug therapy. And because in this region, we test all mothers who come in to deliver for the presence of opioids in their urine, we know that in 2016, that the group of babies cared for by the neonatologist in the Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky region, 800 babies were exposed to opioids in utero, and about 300 of those babies had severe enough symptoms that they needed to stay in hospital an average of 20 days and be treated with either methadone or buprenorphine for their symptoms.
Margot, let's get your perspective on this.
Okay. Well, First Step Home has been around for almost 25 years. And when we started a number of years ago, the focus was mostly on alcohol, crack cocaine. And as Dr. Wettig mentioned, around 2008, we started to see a lot of pregnant women coming needing treatment for drugs and alcohol and the being addicted to opiates. So around 2015, we had to design a special program for women that were coming home with babies that had the NAS syndromes. And we created a program called the Terry Shaneling Home. This is a program that allowed us to provide specialized services for women with their infants coming in. We have 8 bedrooms for those women so that we can provide parenting services. We can watch to see if there are any symptoms developing where mom may have to take the baby back to the hospital. We have found that with our programming that we are having to include others in the community because we cannot do it alone. We work very closely with Children's Hospital, Good Sam Hospital, and other agencies in the community that provide support services for mom. So it's about wrapping service around mom and her baby so that mom will be successful when she goes back into the community. Addiction is a long-term issue that moms have to deal with, but it's not just about staying away from the drugs and the alcohol, but it's also changing the entire lifestyle. It's about housing as well, voc ed services, and other issues.
We will continue our conversation about the Ohio River Valley Addiction Research Consortium. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Joining us to talk about the Ohio River Valley Addiction Research Consortium are NKU Provost and Executive Vice President for Academic Affairs, Sue Ott Rollins, neonatologist Dr. Kathy Wettig, director of Cincinnati Children's Neonatal Follow-Up at TriHealth, and the co-founder of the Neonatal Abstinence Clinic at Cincinnati Children's, Margo Spence, president and CEO of First Step Home, and journalist and author Sam Quinones. And you can join us this afternoon, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Sam, since you wrote the book Dreamland, several years ago, about how the drug epidemic has ravaged the town of Portsmouth, Ohio. What have you observed at the national level as far as inroads in the fight against heroin?
Oh, well, I would say nationally we've seen a far greater awareness and willingness to talk publicly about this. When I was doing the book, I really just thought the book would come out and die because I could not find people who were interested. If people didn't work professionally on the topic, say a public health nurse, for example, or a cop, it was very hard to find people interested in it. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that families of addicted loved ones were interested very much in talking about it. Therefore, the media didn't really pay any attention to it that I could see to any great degree anyway. And, of course, then politicians didn't either. And so I would say that the first big change began about 2 years ago when you began to see more and more media outlets covering this, families understanding that it was important to be public about this, and therefore generating political interest on the part of elected officials in addressing this. But for a long time, elected officials of both parties, for the most part, just didn't really think of it as a big deal because they weren't hearing about it at the local level very much. And so it took a while for that to become reality. But just as with the AIDS epidemic, once people start talking about it, it becomes more of an open thing. Then you get political action. Then you get budget. Then you get motivated political leaders wanting to address that. And I think that's kind of where we are today. And I think that's a huge change. Still a long way to go. But that's a huge change from when I remember in 2013 or 14 that I was writing this book. I just felt all alone. Nobody really cared about this except for a few professionals in working on this.
Margo, are we doing a better job of raising are we becoming more aware of this issue?
Absolutely. Over the last few years, there has not been a meeting that I've had with a legislator that it has not been on the top of their agenda. There's a lot of discussion, I think, because people are finding their neighbors, family members, and people that they affiliate with on a regular basis have been touched by this crisis. So I think more people are willing to talk about it publicly. Now what needs to happen, the awareness needs to also be combined with funding so that we can really do something about this crisis that we have in our country.
Mm-hmm. Margo, get your thoughts on this as well. Are people more aware of this, particularly an issue like neonatal abstinence syndrome? Are people becoming more tuned into that kind of thing?
People are definitely becoming more aware of neonatal abstinence syndrome. I think that which still needs more awareness is that the children of the people who we are seeing overdosing or even dying, the children need to have attention paid to them because they are experiencing some of the serious adverse childhood life events that may have led their parents into the addiction. So we still need to put more energy into the children of this heroin era in order to prevent the next generation being addicted to opioids or whatever the new drug is down the road.
I also think that, going back to something Margo said earlier, that we need to remember that it's not just about staying away from the drug.
Absolutely.
It really is about changing a lifestyle. And in April, NKU will host Matthew Desmond, and author of Evicted, and take a look at how housing insecurity both exacerbates the challenges that recovering addicts may face, but also perpetuates the challenges that we do have in our communities. So I would just want to acknowledge that this is a very broad, complex, complicated issue that will be with us for generations.
Mm-hmm. I think the more that we can look at this as a continuum of care, you know, I think the better impact we're going to have on the crisis. It's not just about mom. It's not just about baby. It's not just about the addiction. It's not just about the housing. But all these pieces have to be looked at in an integrated care model for what's in the best interest of the mother or the family.
Sam, I know that you have to be leaving us shortly. So any final thoughts from you before you take off?
Well, just that you've just heard, I think, is part of what I kind of thought about when I first wrote that op-ed column, that really a community approach is the only way to deal with this, and that means again a continuum of care, a whole variety of ways of dealing with it, and I believe that the Ohio River Valley there is perfectly poised to begin to as a community, as a tri-state community, reaching across borders, county and state lines and so on, and school borders, is perfectly poised to start doing that, to begin to find that funding, and then also begin to start studying this, and then as a way of looking at much more comprehensive approaches to how this might be treated. I think that was kind of the idea that I had, that the more we try to do it, oh, well, only one university is going to work on this alone. To me, that seems to me a waste of time, of effort, of brain power, that it's far more potent as a force to combine on these things and to collaborate and to leave behind some of those turf battles that have left us so siloed and isolated. So anyway, I just want to say I do have to go. I'm sorry.
No problem, Sam.
Very much looking forward to the conference on Friday, being with folks there at Northern Kentucky University. I wanted to say thanks very much to Sue Ott-Rollins for her great vision and energy on this. And I'll see you guys on Friday.
Sam, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Journalist and author Sam Quinones. Sue, how many universities are involved at this point?
It's hard to say. We have at least 180 individuals registered for the conference, which is open to the public, and we have engaged in over 30 with over 30 other universities. We are seeing responses from universities that we hadn't reached out to initially. Southern Illinois University in Carbondale and Evanston and of course University of West Virginia and down into Tennessee. So, you know, we have about five states engaged, large, small, public, private universities coming together.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk to John now. Hi, John.
Hi.
Go right ahead. You're on.
Hi. Yeah. Well, I want you to know that I'm affiliated with the Xavier University Clinical Mental Health Counseling Master's Degree Program. But my question has to do with these NAS babies have two parents, and I was wondering if there's a model for helping both parents in recovery and keeping the father involved? Mm-hmm.
That's a very interesting question because we have that online. We're trying to involve the dads as much as possible with bringing on another partner to work with the significant others at First Step Home. So we're going to bring another organization on our campus to provide support services for the dads. We do have family counseling, but we want something that's directed at that particular clientele that we hope to bring on in January. But we're finding, as you mentioned, it's very important if we're going to look at this as a family unit to include the dad in the process as well.
There are different services offered to babies and preschoolers at Cincinnati Children's. It's, that program is called Baby TIP, or TIP program, which is a therapeutic interagency program that offers child parent psychotherapy within the realm of this of trauma to the child, looking at the trauma to both parents. The idea is for an overall family recovery to this issue that is tearing the family apart.
So, Sue, what are you hoping comes out of this first conference?
Oh, that's a great question. My hope is that people connect, that researchers, people working in nonprofit segments, clinical providers, policymakers all come together, share information, learn about what they're doing, each other's doing, connect, form research partnerships, eventually pursue funding together. This is a long-term problem, and we're taking a long-term approach to addressing, doing our part to address it. So this is the first step in bringing people together to connect.
Margo, what are you hoping comes out of this?
You know, I'm very excited about this opportunity to be able to connect with researchers, because as a practitioner, we're doing things that we think may be correct, but we also would like to hear what are some of the best practices that have been proven through the research. So we're very excited to be part of this.
Mm-hmm. And Kathy?
I think that this gives us the opportunity to look at the problem from the prenatal all the way through to adulthood, and to realize how one builds on the other, and not just take one little point. Like, as we look at neonatal abstinence syndrome, we can discuss, well, what drugs should we treat it with? But if we look at it from a standpoint of what even happened to the mother before she got pregnant and how that's having its effect on the baby now, on the child later, on the mother and her interaction with the child. I think we take it out of little pieces and put it in a continuum.
In a holistic approach.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So what comes next? After the conference, where do things go?
Well, that gives me an opportunity to say that as we're looking at neonatal abstinence syndrome during this conference, a week later, there'll be a conference at Northern Kentucky Convention Center put on by Children's Hospital in Glatthouse that looks at changing the outcome for children of parents who have had an issue with opioid misuse. And so we will be looking at just what types of issues the children can have as a preschooler, in school, medical issues, court issues, how to keep the families together, making this a whole family recovery, not just a mother recovery or a baby recovery.
And then when we're talking about NAS, there are long-term implications to this, aren't there?
Unfortunately, there are long-term implications that we have seen. We cannot predict which babies will have these problems, but we have seen issues with lazy eye. We have seen issues with the muscle tone issues. We have seen issues with what we call torticollis or wry neck. We have seen behavioral issues. Two-year-olds that I call two-year-olds on steroids. We've seen kids, unfortunately, that have been expelled from preschool. or kindergarten, just because their behavior is not able to be managed. And then we move into all the school problems children can have.
Sue, give us the details for the conference.
So the conference is from 9 a.m. to 4:45 p.m. on Friday, this Friday the 10th, at the Student Union on the campus of Northern Kentucky University. And we have a combination of keynote speakers and panels going throughout the day. Also, of course, Sam Quinones here will be back again to talk with us. And I just want to say that this is sponsored by our Health Innovation Center, which will have a grand opening in 2018. And so it is the mission of that center to improve the population health of our region.
Well, thank you all for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you for having us.
NKU Provost and Executive Vice President for Academic Affairs, Sue Ott Rollins, neonatologist Dr. Kathy Wettig, Director of Cincinnati Children's Neonatal Follow-Up at TriHealth, and the co-founder of the Neonatal Abstinence Clinic at Cincinnati Children's, Margot Spence, President and CEO of First Step Home. Coming up, the story of America's first opiate crisis. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.